is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz's trip to Beijing, is extremely controversial in Berlin and throughout Europe, asking the question why and what did Olaf Scholz get for his venture with Xi Jinping following Xi Jinping's rather famous now declaration that he is the general secretary indefinitely of the Chinese Communist Party. After the 20th Party Congress, he's all powerful. So why did the chancellor choose now to go and sit with the ally of his enemy, Vladimir Putin, in Moscow? Joseph Sternberg, writing of these matters in his column, Political Economics, he is based in London. And why Germany is important is that this is the driver for exports and banking of all of the European Union. And the question is the European Union looking for a new day through Germany of trading with China during the crisis with Russia? Joe, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Your measure of Olaf Scholz's visit, we know it was controversial at home. Is there a list of what he got for his efforts and why he has sacrificed so much poor public opinion for these for this adventure on his way to Asia? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. No, I mean, what's one of the things that's so interesting about this trip is that German Chancellor Olaf Scholz came back from China basically empty-handed. And so I think that that is interesting for a couple of reasons. I mean, first off, as you know, noted, this trip was very controversial within Germany because it is coming at a time when Germany, after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, is rethinking Berlin's relationship with a lot of the world's autocrats. And, you know, thoughts immediately turn to the relationship with China, which under Scholz's predecessor, Angela Merkel, had been really marked by a focus on the commercial, the economic side of that relationship. Now there's a new interest in human rights issues. There's also a sense that that commercial relationship could become a vulnerability for Germany if, say, there were a Chinese invasion of Taiwan and the West needed to impose sanctions on China or cut ties in some way. So you have this discussion going on, and Chancellor Scholz is clearly part of the camp that thinks that there is still an economic relationship there to salvage, and that this, you know, doing so would be very important for Germany. So he invests considerable political capital in making this trip that was very controversial in Germany, that a lot of other German politicians and media thought that he shouldn't have made the trip. He goes there, and then what does he come back with? Nothing. And it's almost as if that experience confirms the correctness of the critics when they say, you know, what are we actually getting from this relationship now? So I think that, you know, it's not only notable that he didn't seem to really achieve very much when he was there. The fact of that failure to achieve anything itself potentially feeds into some of these ongoing debates in Germany.
You report correctly that German companies are expanding in China. Is that of necessity, Joe? Is that to fill the place that the previous companies, the U.S. and other countries, filled in China, having now left? How is Germany regarding the idea of expanding at this time?
Well, I do think that something that's emerging is this kind of investment is being viewed as something of a necessity, but mainly because of what's happening on the German side rather than the Chinese side. So there isn't necessarily a sense that China needs the Germans to come in and backfill any investment from the U.S. or elsewhere that, that might be withdrawing at the moment. It's more a sense that the German companies feel that they still have to invest in China because that market is growing for them in a way that their home market might not be. And this is the part of Germany's discussion about China policy that politicians in Berlin aren't willing to have yet. It's all well and good to say that Germany needs to cultivate economic or commercial independence from China. That then raises the question of what markets will German companies become more dependent on to fill the gap if China is not an option for them. And no one can yet make a convincing case that Germany will fill that gap. But so, for example, You have the chemical company BASF announcing that it's trying to expand its footprint in Germany, in China, at the same time that is aggressively reducing its footprint in Germany because the energy costs and the regulatory burdens back home are just too high for it to continue to operate economically at the same level that it was doing before. And I think that the realization has not yet set in Berlin, that if they really want that independence from China, they are going to have to work harder to give German and other European companies viable business opportunities back home to compensate for the markets that those companies might end up losing in China over the medium term.
Germany is faced with, right now, a lack of energy, a shortage of energy. And you say correctly that it's heavily committed to renewables. Is there something in China that Germany, to my knowledge, China doesn't have energy for Germany. China doesn't have, well, I guess you could say it was a source of renewable parts, you know, wind and solar, but nothing in particular that would help the energy story. Is this outside of Scholz's writ?
Well, I mean, the thing that China has is a lack of shame about burning coal, if that's what they need to do to keep the lights on. So, I mean, the key energy issue here is not necessarily whether China is going to export energy resources to Europe or Germany. It certainly is not going to do that. But China has also shown that it is not willing to the same degree to impose on itself the sort of environmental regulations and, you know, net zero carbon goals and the like that have been so ruinous for Europe's own ability to keep its lights on. And so that means that if a German company is investing in a manufacturing facility in China, they can be reasonably certain that they are going to have the energy they'll need when they will need it, which is not something that you can say if you're investing in manufacturing in Europe right now.
The automakers, Daimler you mentioned and Volkswagen and BMW, high-end stuff. Is that necessary for Germany to get a foothold in China? Are they in competition with Tesla? This is especially for electric vehicles. Now, I'm looking for a justification for this visit.
Well, I mean, a big part of the issue in industries like auto is that Western policymakers and politicians have made no secret of the fact that they're hoping that they're going to push the internal combustion engine out of use by about 2035. And Beijing has made some similar noises, but with big carve outs for the kind of hybrids that Western automakers are currently able to produce. Whereas I think that a lot of these investments in electric vehicles remain much more speculative at this point. It's not entirely sure how well you can scale that up to an entire auto market. So I think the issue there is that German and other European automakers might feel that they need to continue investing in expanding their footprint in China because that is the government that for now is going to allow them to sell the cars that they are actually able to manufacture for the foreseeable future. I think that is another bit of denial in Western policymaking circles that we haven't been able to crack yet. I mean, you have to reassure your manufacturers that they will be able to sell their products in your market over the medium to longer term.
One more try. Reuters, Berlin. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who was heavily criticized for a trip to Beijing this week, see above, said on Saturday after his visit to Xi Jinping, his and Chinese President Xi Jinping's joint statement opposing the use of nuclear weapons in Ukraine has been reason enough for the visit. This puzzled me when I first read it, Joe. It now confounds me. What does nuclear weapons have to do with a business embassy to Beijing for business?
It doesn't have much, although, I mean, this is also a big issue that Berlin is working through right now in terms of its relationship with China, is China's relationship with Russia. Remember that Xi Jinping pledged no limits friendship with Vladimir Putin a few weeks before Putin began the invasion of Ukraine back in February. And that has created all manner of problems for Europe's relationship with China. I think that what is happening is that Scholz is probably hoping that opens an opportunity for him to leverage his relationship with Xi Jinping to apply backdoor pressure on Vladimir Putin not to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine, which is something that Berlin is very worried about. But, I mean, that is very thin gruel for a trip that was this controversial.
Now we come to the politics of it back in Berlin. Annalena Baerbock is the foreign minister. She's also a prominent member of the Greens. She ran for the chancellorship as a Green member. Her colleagues in the Green have very important positions in the cabinet, in and around the cabinet, including being deputy chancellor. Did this give her a leg up, Joe, the mistake of Olaf Scholz going for nothing?
I think this has ended up empowering politicians who are much more hawkish on China, because it sort of gave them a stark contrast with their own position so that they could more clearly articulate what hawkishness might actually look like in practice. And this has been a bad China visit for Olaf Scholz. I think it was probably a pretty good China visit for Annalena Baerbock, who, of course, didn't go, precisely because it gave her an opportunity to, again, articulate the arguments in favor of a more hawkish approach. I think that that has been an important dynamic in a lot of these discussions, that you actually have pretty prominent political figures, even within Olaf Scholz's own coalition government, who are making contrary arguments now. And you didn't used to see that in the same way.
And finally, about the human rights. China is identified with abuse of the Uyghurs and other peoples, the Tibetans, certainly in Hong Kong, certainly intimidation of the neighbors, all of that. That's a major story, and it is in Germany as well. Did Scholz skate by it successfully, or is that being brought up again and again? Why are you sitting down with someone who's identified as practicing genocide?
Well, I think that Scholz would probably argue this kind of engagement or going on this trip as a way of keeping the lines of communication open so that you have that telephone line available through which you can then put pressure on the Communist Party regime over human rights. But against that, you have had people like Annalena Baerbock and other leading politicians in Germany who are starting to argue, well, you know, we need a foreign policy that is actually much more cognizant of these rights issues, that is much more aware of the nature of the regimes with which we're negotiating when we come time to do the commercial stuff. And so I think there's a very live debate right now in Germany about exactly what role some of these human rights considerations should play.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of The Wall Street Journal, writing about Olaf Scholz in Germany. We're going to turn to several other leaders right now in Sharm el-Sheikh, where they're holding COP27. In specific, Rishi Sunak, the new Prime Minister of Great Britain, and French President Emmanuel Macron. I'm John Batchelor.